I'm Dan Fernandez, and we're here at TechEd with Rafael. So why don't you introduce yourself and what you do?
Well, first of all, thank you very much for inviting me here. I work for a company based in the UK and in Ireland. It's called Project Botticelli Limited.
Okay.
And we specialize in two areas, security, especially data protection with cryptography, and data mining. And the reason such two different areas is because they're actually very connected through such dry and unexciting subjects as statistics, probability, and algebra, which I am definitely not talking about.
Okay.
This week.
Good. Now, so one of the things, I know you from back in the day from, you know, probably some tech ed in New Zealand or something where we were in some bus speeding somewhere. I don't even remember first time I met you, but you always are at tech eds and you're destroying the scores. now you're hurting all of us by just ruining the curve. And so I guess what I'm saying is stop it. But how do you do it? How do you end up with like the best scores like consistently? Did you find out how to hack the system? Is that what it is, or what do you do in your sessions that's so magical?
Well, first of all, thank you very much. I love compliments, so that was a very good one and the longest one probably I've had for at least a year. I think the first of all, yes, I've done some data mining of the scores, and I've done some data mining of what it is that the audience who comes to these events really wants.
Really?
And the data mining I've done proves somewhat obvious things, that you basically need to have a focused session that's technically rich, that is full of something that people are obviously wanting to learn, so you're not talking about old stuff.
Sure.
Free of marketing, none of the waffle that unfortunately you see sometimes at conferences. Delivered in a confident way with a little bit of humor, with demos that work, so kind of things that you should be doing. I've been fairly successful, especially in Europe. I've been speaking at Tech Academia for the last 11 years, and the last 6 years, I have managed indeed to win the top spot of the conference at TechEd Developers. But here in the United States,
yeah,
I have not had that luck yet.
Oh, really?
No,
okay.
No, I'm placing somewhere in or near the top 10.
Okay.
And it is my goal to improve my score. So I'm data mining the results coming out of this conference right now. And I think I'm also learning that it's important to have that cultural connection to the audience, which is easier for me in Europe and a little harder here in the States.
So you have to throw in like NASCAR or football jokes, it can't be soccer or
it has to be awesome.
Okay,
which I'm not very good at yet.
Yeah, you got to learn some of the slang interesting. So you really do mine the data. I think that's like a brilliant approach to actually using technology to increase your score. So that's
you preach what you practice, and there are patterns and there are some interesting things that you find out. Like, for example, scores on certain days can be slightly better than on other days.
Really? So what's a good day to have a session?
Thursday.
Thursday, really?
And Friday.
Thursday and Friday, really?
Actually, Friday is the best day for the scores, provided that enough people stay for your session. So here in US, because people fly so much from so far away, Friday is a poorer day because not so many attendees actually remain. In Europe, they tend to stay until the end of the conference on Friday.
Right.
So the scores perhaps over there are a little bit better on Friday, whilst here a little bit better on Thursday. But definitely towards the end of the conference, the scores improve.
Interesting. That's very interesting. So, like, I guess I'm going to have to think about this next time I'm planning my sessions to try and stack at the end. Very interesting.
But conversely, it can go the other way around, too.
Yeah.
So it also depends on the subject you cover. And this year, TechEd organizers here in Orlando have been extremely good at putting the introductory type of sessions at the beginning, the middle ones in the middle, and the advanced ones at the end.
Right.
And I think that's the right thing to do. So if your session and your subject is supposed to introduce a new concept to the audience that is perhaps as innovative as using data mining for building intelligent applications, you should do it at the beginning of the conference, as I did.
Interesting.
On the other side, if you are going to be talking about advanced uses of cryptography for data protection and you want to cover cryptography next generation API, that's better done on Friday, as I will be doing.
Right. So now you are giving talks every day, you said earlier, and even for, this is TechEd Developers, but you also do the TechEd IT Pro.
Yeah.
So you're here for weeks and you're talking every single day.
Yeah, not the entire week next week,
okay.
Only the first 3 days, so I get back home eventually.
Okay, but, that's still plenty.
Well, thank you. In general, I like to cover the both angles because what made, I think, me and my company unique is knowing that whatever developers do only lives when someone runs it in a real operational environment, typically somewhere in a larger enterprise. And I have been able to bridge the gap between the language that you use when you talk to the IT pros and the language you use to talk to the developers, which I think somehow adds value to my presentations. They may be harder on the ears of a developer or the IT pro because I talk about their sworn enemy sometimes.
Sure.
But it's more realistic, and I think that's something that allows me to speak at the two conferences too.
Interesting. Now, since you said tech enemy, what happens when you get first? Like, do they hand you the keys to, you know, like a Porsche Boxster, and you get to drive it? Do you get a crown that's made out of like a circuit boards, or have you gotten any like good stuff for being other than like the congratulatory emails or?
Well, the best stuff you get is the fact that people recognize you and they come to you and they are so nice. And the speaker community, especially when you get towards those top scores, is actually very competitive. It's almost like a sport.
Yeah.
Getting to that top spot ends up being a competition. But unlike many sports, it's very cooperative. And we do have a bit of a battle throughout the week. You know,
of course.
The hearts and minds, we want to get them.
Yeah.
But at the end, everybody comes together and people are really nice. So the best thing is that a lot of people come to you and they say that they enjoyed the competition and maybe even that they learned something from you and you learned something from them.
I'm going to steal every idea you have on this thing to improve my score. So that's really...
And
yes,
of course,
absolutely.
There's a bottle of champagne too.
Oh, really? Yeah, okay. So that is the reward. They give you a bottle of champagne?
You get a bottle of champagne, the recognition. At the end of the day, winning the conference is probably also the reason you get invited to other conferences. So
right.
This counts.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's always sort of like a funny, interesting community from people that are speaking because there's so many that are in a program. So we haven't mentioned, but you're a regional director. Is that correct?
No, I'm not.
Oh, really? Okay.
I have, however, worked with a regional director program for many, many, many years.
Okay. Are you an MVP?
Neither, and I have also worked with that program.
How bizarre.
Yeah.
All right, well, I'll contact some people.
Well, I should perhaps explain that I have been working with Microsoft very closely, like a regional director, like an MVP, long before these programs have been established.
Sure.
I started in 1993 working with Microsoft, which is, you know, 15 years of doing that. So in many ways, most of these programs, which are incredibly valuable, and I always love to work with MVPs and regional directors, and most of the programs have been created after I already built my relationship. So perhaps it wasn't so necessary for me to join them at the time.
Mm-hmm.
If I was doing it again, I would definitely become both an MVP and a regional director in all of my areas. Come to think about it, perhaps I will anyway.
Yeah, you probably... I just assumed you were. Now, you mentioned this briefly, but data mining and applications.
Yeah.
So that's a really cool and, to me, a fascinating subject for something I've noticed inside Microsoft. We don't actually, we record a bunch of data, but we're not mining it whatsoever. And we even had an entire internal project trying to mine and just see what very basic customer behavior is. But this is actually within applications. So tell me, what's the theory? What's the thinking behind this?
So this is called predictive programming, and it's a fairly innovative approach which allows your application to make logical decisions without having any rules encoded by you. This is typically used for three areas. You can do business process validation, input validation, or you can build an adaptive user interface. So just to take input validation as an example,
mm-hmm.
Every application has to check input against hundreds or thousands of rules. So as a developer, you code those rules, and you have lots and lots of code which says that if on this entry screen the value of the age is smaller than 1 or greater than 120, then do that.
Mm-hmm.
And then you say, if this screen says male and the person is a daughter, then flag it as an error, and so on and so on and so on.
Mm-hmm.
So what you can do now with predictive programming is throw all of this out. It's unnecessary code, and I can even venture to say probably something like 50% of input validation code can be thrown away.
But what about defensive programming? What would you say to defensive programming? So, like, you make sure that you're actually checking your inputs so somebody doesn't try and...
Yeah, so you're absolutely right. There's two types of validation that you do. There's validation for security, and there's validation for correctness.
Okay.
The validation for security, you probably need to code to some extent the rules. Now, the validation for correctness, for improved customer experience, basically so the application doesn't fail because of inconsistent data, you don't need to code. What you do instead is you mine your transaction log or your application log or just a database of customers. Mm-hmm. And what SQL Server Analysis Services data mining will do for you is find a model, a pattern that describes what's correct and what's not. Mm-hmm. What your application then does is it takes the input from that screen, field by field taken from the form, you build a query, and you ask data mining engine just one question. What's the case likelihood? In other words, what's the probability mm-hmm. that this data matches my known pattern? And it tells you, for example, 1%. Mm-hmm. Then you know you have suspicious entry.
Sure.
And you can actually then go back to the engine and say, which of the fields on the screen are the most suspicious? And it says, well, it's gender, because someone marked male for, say, a daughter, which doesn't work.
Sure.
And that approach means that instead of thousands of lines of code, you just need one if, build a query, and run it as a prediction.
So how would that work? Like, is the data analysis cube on the local machine, or is this, say, a web app that's right. doing a query, or like, how do you actually set it up? Because you wouldn't want to have all customers on a data entry application or something where you'd need terabytes, for example, of data. So how does that actually work?
It's a great question, and I actually did my session on this. And
oh, really? Okay.
I had almost that question from someone else, so I
perfect.
Need to put a slide, I guess, about
okay.
it. So first of all, absolutely, it would be totally wrong to give access to the underlying data to such an application, so you don't. What you do is you build a mining model. We don't actually call it a cube, it's a mining model, it's a different
okay.
entity. You build the mining model offline, sometime when you are building the application, and then on a regular basis to refresh it, maybe on a monthly, weekly, or daily basis.
Okay.
And what you need to give your application access to is not the underlying data, but only the mining model. The
okay.
mining model does not contain the underlying data from those terabytes that you are talking about.
Okay.
It's actually a very small structure, only a few kilobytes, maybe
really?
25 kilobytes at the most.
Wow.
It's so powerful because it has the rules rather
right,
than
right.
the actual data. And once you've got that structure, that's what you give access to. That structure sits inside SQL Server Analysis Services database,
mm-hmm.
not the data database, but the analysis service database, and that's what you are going to access.
Interesting.
Yeah.
All right, so you mentioned UI output. What's the adaptive UI? Because that
yeah.
one sounds interesting, where it's you can actually change the UI based on how a user is really mm. using the application?
Absolutely.
All right, is this crazy, or are we doing drugs, or how the hell are you doing this?
You are following what people do, basically. Rather than decide a flow in a wizard,
right.
this step, then that, you can actually discover what people want to do next. Say, take a web application.
Mm-hmm.
We know that the way a web has been built is not necessarily the way people use it. So let's mine the click stream. You take the click stream of every visit of every user to your website over, say, last year or two, and you apply the sequence clustering algorithm from SQL Server Analysis Services.
And that's something that's built in?
Absolutely. It's
okay.
one of the 9 built-in algorithms. It will build a pattern that contains clusters of typical behaviors. And typically, you will find you may have a few dozen, maybe 100 or more clusters.
Mm-hmm.
So all customer behaviors are grouped in there. So one thing you can do immediately in an offline kind of mode is restructure your application based on following those clusters. But what's adaptive user interface is actually takes it to another step. It looks at whatever click the customer has made now
mm-hmm.
and uses then the predictor engine of sequence clustering algorithm to predict the next click.
Oh, interesting.
And it offers the customer that as one of the next steps, suggesting now you probably want to click on this, this, or that.
Right.
And that actually makes the customer much more efficient in getting their job done because it almost knows what people want to do.
Yeah, yeah.
That's
fascinating.
Pretty powerful.
So how, like, in terms of going back to the mechanics, how would this be done? So at some point, it sounds like the cluster gives me a predictive path. Let's just say there's one, signing up. Or log in, or maybe mm-hmm. checking email or something, where you log in and then you want to see your inbox,
mm-hmm.
For example. How would you, as a developer, you now have this cluster that that's one, step two, step three. Are you then building the application after that, or are you doing some sort of dynamism where the UI presentation would actually change based on the cluster so it's more dynamic, or mm-hmm. is that just smoke and mirrors craziness, or do you build sort of, because there's so many things with UI where you would actually want to spend time and make sure that you're at least doing that path easily. Like, how does it work, or what have you seen work in the real world?
So that's actually two good questions. What we think you should do and what we know works now. So let me start with the reality and then the theory. The reality is that we found that this works best for perhaps not the opening screen, but once you get to perform a particular task, one that has a sequence of clicks.
Okay.
So no, I wouldn't use it to change the way your Outlook opening screen works.
Okay.
But when you start doing something like, let's configure this.
Okay.
Or how do I change the parameters of that? Or, okay, I'm ready to buy some complex product, just get me going. Or the sweet spot of this application is any complex transaction, such as I'm going to buy insurance. What are the steps through which I need to get to actually get the best?
Yes.
So you see anything that's
sequential. Sure.
So where it works best is that you already have screens, and each screen is a page or a form. And you just need to figure out what's the best order in which to present them. That's where this comes in. Because having analyzed the free stream of clicks that people actually follow, we know what are the most likely paths. And we can direct them to the most likely next click. That's what works best. In theory, we haven't seen it used yet much, but I would love to people who are watching this to experiment with it, of course.
Is
to use it to, for example, reorganize the toolbars.
Right.
To show the most likely buttons there. But you have to be careful because you can also confuse people very easily.
Where the behavior is inconsistent and they don't know why.
And you cannot do that. We've had some applications in the past that did that, and changing the UI for someone who is memorizing it is a horrible thing to do.
Sure.
You don't want your scissors suddenly change from right-handed to left-handed scissors, right? So there is some stability to the UI which we have to preserve.
Sure.
So the best place is really when you have a sequence, and you can offer to the viewer, to the user, a different step as a choice of two or three most likely steps.
Cool. So, you know, you talked about data mining as a whole. Like, where do you see, like, the big... to me, data mining is kind of an iceberg. Like, we're just, like, if I look at where we were in 2000 and where we are now, huge leaps and bounds. And obviously with SQL Server 2008, screaming children, I don't know how they're here. But it must be our interns, very young these days. So back to data mining. Like, where do you see as, like, the next killer app for data mining?
To me, the biggest killer app for data mining is exactly using it for predictive programming. So embedding it in the application to make them more intelligent. Because what applications lack today is ability to become better at making the choices. We are coding too much in terms of those rules. We are spending time building unnecessary rule sets. Mm-hmm. And I think this is one of the best things we could put in. Business process validation is a big one. In other words, knowing when to stop a transaction because it's going to fail.
Oh, interesting.
Just by looking at all of its, you know, funny parameters, we never even compare against each other.
Mm-hmm.
The reason this is so special is because you are putting a negative feedback loop into the application. Because of your data mining engine, the application stops the bad transactions, so it functions better. As a result of it functioning better, you change the model using which it makes those decisions. So that model becomes more precise.
Okay.
And the application becomes more intelligent.
So it's adaptive. It's some
adaptive
of that.
Yeah.
Sure.
This is pure artificial intelligence without calling it AI, which is quite powerful.
Yeah.
Especially if the algorithm you may want to use to discover or predict the failure of a transaction would be a neural network or logistic regression.
Sure.
To algorithms which are probably most exciting but also a little dangerous to use. Those algorithms are pure artificial intelligence put in a very practical way into your application. So I think that's pretty much one of the biggest killers.
Awesome. Now, SQL Server 2008 introduced a lot of features. I always see you as somebody that's, you know, using the cutting edge, always like knows everything that's going on. What's next for SQL Server, or what would be on your short list in terms of BI and maybe administration stuff?
Well, when it comes to SQL 2008, BI, and specifically data mining, there's quite a few enhancements. It's much better at predicting numerical trends. The time series algorithm is now great for predicting short and long-term numerical values. But above all, it's much easier to build and test your models.
Okay.
SQL 2008 has a few features which make the life of a developer easier. For example, it allows you to do cross-validation, which is a way of checking whether your model is reliable. It also makes it easier to test the models because it splits the data for you automatically into a testing and a training set. So it's basically practical. As a developer, if you are making now a decision whether to use SQL 2005 or 2008, and you can wait a little, 2008 makes your life much easier for data mining.
Okay.
But I think it will go way beyond that. I think what we
Yeah, so what's your dream? What's SQL 2012 or whatever the next two versions from now would be?
Yeah. What I really would like to see from it is ability to build the models without actually having to do anything at all. Basically say, this is my data, tell me what's the intelligence in it. And then I would like to be able to drop it as a component into my application and visually connect a screen to it, an input screen or a form. So I actually don't have to write any of the planning.
Oh, interesting.
I really would like to see that.
So just to understand your first part, it would be, I don't want to tell you to look for these patterns.
Yeah.
I'm just going to give you a bunch of data and you find what's interesting.
Yeah.
Is that that would be awesome. Yeah.
And I want it all color-coded, showing me then how accurate or inaccurate the model is.
Sure, sure.
Because the testing part is the one that a lot of people neglect a lot. And I'd like that to be automated too. Today, when you, for example, do cross-validation, which is a great feature in SQL 2008, it throws a few numbers. And you need to understand them. They're very easy to understand. You are looking basically for the smallest possible value when you look for numbers such as variance or standard deviation. But
sure.
I don't want people even to have to know that.
Sure,
I just want
sure.
them to see a green and a red, which kind of guides them. So it's
and that could be something like maybe you're only looking at three customers in a specific city or something versus, so you can't really predict everybody in that city would have this behavior, for example.
Is that
Exactly. Cool. All right. Well, thanks, Rafael, for your time. And this has definitely been very cool stuff. And you can look for Rafael and his sessions all over TechEd, US, EMEA, and I'm sure the Australian ones as well.
Well, thank you very much.
Thanks.